Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. I am your host, Mitch Robbins. I'm the founder and managing director at the Anthony Michael Group, building companies and careers across MedTech here in the U.S., primarily areas like regulatory, quality, risk management, compliance. On the commercial side, we do a lot with market access and reimbursement. But back here today with another esteemed guest, we're talking with Mr. Jason Gorman, who is the Vice President of Quality, Regulatory, and Compliance at Propeller Health. Jason comes to us today with over 25 years of experience across the medtech industry. He's got a proven track record for developing and implementing quality management systems, risk management strategies, and regulatory compliance processes that meet the highest standards of excellence and customer satisfaction. Prior to working for Propeller Health, Jason spent over a decade working for Accurate. For those now unfamiliar with Propeller Health, now owned by ResMed, it's a precision digital health company on a mission to uplift every person living with chronic disease so they can take control of their health and live a better life. The Propeller platform includes FDA-cleared and CE-marked medical devices, consumer apps, support and coaching, and secure access to clinical data for provider monitoring. So without further ado, Jason, welcome
thanks for
to the
having
show.
Me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
I am too, man. And we're going to tackle a topic that I'm so excited about because it's so relevant in the space that we're living in right now within MedTech. And to give a little bit of a teaser, it is really kind of the intersection of quality, regulatory, and now cybersecurity. And we all know that the FDA updated their cybersecurity guidance late last year in 2023. And we're going to talk kind of what does that mean in today's world from an actual real life standpoint as a quality and regulatory professional. But before we get into all that good stuff, I want to go back in time, man, because we always say people who work in regulatory or even quality for that matter, they don't necessarily come out of school thinking I'm going to be a regulatory professional. It usually happens by happenstance, very similar to our profession in recruiting, where you don't come out thinking I'm going to be a headhunter. Things happen along the way and you land into it. So if you would take us back in time, give us your story.
Yeah, sure. Well, you're right. I didn't go to school thinking I'd end up in this career. And I think if you met anybody I hung out with in my school days, they would probably be horribly surprised that I'm working in a regulated industry. But honestly, my career really began on the clinical side. So, you know, after school, I started working in radiation oncology field, initially as a radiation therapist and then as a medical dosimetrist. And, you know, this was in a really interesting time, right? So this is the early mid 90s. And well, we were having our own sort of technology influx at that time. So just really starting to bring like computers into the day-to-day life and the environment. But I will say that that is really where I think my kind of foundations in quality came from. I was super process driven. You know, we had a lot of things just written down like paper and pencil and like back of envelope calculations and stuff. So I started really early, like just building process and forms and things like that. And, you know, learning the smartest people I know also make mistakes. So, you know, building some redundancy and process. So I ended up doing some management activities, doing administrative work and the hospital side. And then I moved to the med device side 20 years ago now. This kills really fast. Yeah, you know, working for a startup, which is interesting, doing a lot of different activities there. I really started getting into the quality and regulatory formal space at my time at Accuray. That just came naturally out of tackling some 483s that the company was managing through. So and I've spent the last number of years working quality, regulatory, and compliance. Accuray is a capital medical equipment company, so I learned a lot of really interesting things there. They use software a lot, but I was very interested in digital health space. So about 5 years ago, I made the move over to Propeller. And, you know, I'm a type 1 diabetic, so I use a lot of digital health tools to manage my own conditions and felt like something very new and interesting. So That's how I got there.
That's interesting that you say that, because that space is exploding. There's so much technology coming out in diabetes. Thanks for sharing the backstory as far as, you know, how you kind of gravitated from the healthcare side or the hospital side into traditional medical device and now digital health. You know, not every quality or regulatory professional has the oversight of privacy or security for that matter, right? And so today we're going to talk about kind of what's going on with cybersecurity. But before we do, when did you start taking on more of that piece, more security or privacy related?
Matters? So, you know, Propel, a pretty small organization, right? And a few years ago, I started working a lot more closely with our DevOps team and our infrastructure team to handle a lot of the governance side of, you know, our SOC 2 audits, our high trust audits and things like that. So it sort of just became a natural extension. They needed someone to kind of help manage through those processes. And as I did so, just became more and more heavily involved in integrating those two processes. I wouldn't say I'm a technical expert on privacy controls. So I'm not going to be the person that sets up your network. But, you know, I think it's been important. I've been spending a lot of time focused again on the governance component of it.
Okay. So with that said, you know, there's so much disruption going on in the space right now. Over the last couple of years, obviously MDR has been the talk of the town and kind of the debacle of what you call MDR transition. Now we've got, you know, QSR to QMSR, right? How do you compare those kind of updates and disruptions, if you will, to what's going on now with cybersecurity?
Yeah, I love this question. I think this is really interesting. So, you know, first of all, cybersecurity isn't really new, but it feels very new, right? You know, it's written in the 62304, which much everyone's familiar with. It's in Annex 1 of MDR, but it wasn't like the headline of MDR. I started to see a lot more conversations around this, around some of the actions, activities that FDA's been doing, you know, with their guidance and rules in this space. I think people are also really surprised a little bit by the level of detail FDA is going into on, you know, submissions related to cybersecurity, right?
And I would stop you there, because am I not mistaken by saying that FDA is literally hiring outside consultants who are cyber experts to review these submissions, or at least that piece of it?
This is what I've been hearing, yes, that, you know.
Yeah.
So I think the level of detail in those reviews is pretty impactful, right? So, you know, and that's largely thinking about, you know, companies putting new products and things out in the field, right? Going through pre-market 510K process or something. But then you also have to think the impact of all the existing products that fall into that category of cyber devices that are eventually going to get new features and new functionality that'll go through 510K process or something like that. Those will all be re-reviewed against all the cybersecurity requirements as well. So I think the level of effort to, you know, to bring everything to this new level is going to be pretty massively disruptive for a lot of companies.
Yeah. And this is probably the most exciting piece that I'm wanting to talk about with you today, is that I keep thinking in my head, with all this change, and I know, I get it, cybersecurity has been around within medical device for a while, but now it's kind of coming to the forefront, along with the rest of the world right now talking about cyber all over the place. It's crazy. But I just feel like there's going to be some sort of evolution when it comes to functional roles in an organization that combine some element of security or quality and regulatory in one way, shape, or form. Like, there's got to be an intersection where there's a dedicated person or a dedicated team. What is your thought about the evolution of the role?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I'll go out on a limb here and say I imagine different companies are going to handle this in a lot of different ways, right? It reminds me a little bit of when GDPR was enacted. So you might find, you know, the DPO and the quality or regulatory org, or in the compliance org, or in legal, or in IT, or just create a whole new privacy function. So, but I think when you're, I like to start when you think about digital products specifically, right? Kind of that Venn diagram of where the enterprise ends and where the product begins. You know, in the old days, they used to be very separate domains, right? But the Venn diagram is like starting to look a lot more like circle now. So, you know, people in the quality regulatory org are going to have to become more and more comfortable understanding security controls and some of the governance around that and best practices. They don't have to be the overall technical experts. You know, we should think of security frameworks and requirements kind of like we think of 60601 standards and things like that, right? But I think that there is going to make this work, there are going to be new roles. There's new work to be done, right? Like all these, everybody has a finite number of resources. So you're going to need the technical expertise controls that you might find, you know, in your enterprise security team or in your, you know, DevOps team, you know, but they're going to need to get more involved somehow or new roles built into the product development side. And then on the process and documentation side, you know, that's the bread and butter of QA and RA, but those things are going to have to much more tightly integrate, at least in that space where, you know, FDA and others are going to have oversight because it's going to work a little different.
So, and that's where the challenging piece comes to my mind is like, on one side, you've got very technical people who are more IT focused, more security, like DevOps, yeah. like you said, testing, all that stuff. On the other hand, you have people who are much more focused on compliance, regulatory, quality, like their world. Where is the intersection? Because you got very technical people who don't know much about quality and regulatory. You've got quality and regulatory folks who they can touch the surface, but they're not necessarily that technical. So where, how do you mesh those together?
Yeah, I mean, I think in my point of view, let's start with an easy one, right? So post-market, for sure, right? Post-market activities are going to be an area that I think you're going to have a lot more integration, and you're going to have people that understand both sides of that. So, you know, let's just start with, so you have better documented cybersecurity requirements now. They could be functional or non-functional. And then there's a defect, and that defect could be anything from just a regular old software bug or something in like an open source library that somebody uses, right? So how are we going to think about managing those things, right? There might be processes around vulnerability management that has been in the domain of the security team that's a little distant that now really needs a little bit more oversight and management through normal defect management workflows, non-conformances and CAPAs and things like that. So mm-hmm. I think there's an area where you'll need both sides of that expertise. And I think I've even seen some roles posted, you know, just on LinkedIn, right? Of like regulatory security engineers and things like that starting to happen.
Really?
Right. What it's going to also take though is really that sort of that leadership and that connective tissue that you'll need, because if you just randomly start bringing cybersecurity experts into engineering, product development, QARA, you already have your secure enterprise team, you know, you also have to come to some consensus about what good looks like, right? Or what requirements you're going to build against or what standards you're going to adopt or not, and why and how you're making those decisions. Because that's what all the frameworks are asking for.
So do you think that the quality or regulatory folks are going to have to become more technically trained? Or do you think it's going to be the opposite way where a security person is going to learn more about, you know, quality and compliance?
I think it'll be a little bit of both, right? I mean, if you just look naturally at a QARA org, you might have people that are electrical engineers or mechanical engineers. You know, they're involved in a bunch of different products all over the place. And I hope we start to see some people with security backgrounds, you know, enter the QARA space, right? I think it's an interesting point. Now, there's not enough security people in the universe anyway. I don't know if they want to jump right into quality regulatory yet, but I think that on the security team side, I think depending on the types of infrastructures or systems that they use, they may have a little bit of existing understanding, but they're going to have to need to learn a little bit more about core QMS processes and stuff like that. And
yeah, I agree with you on that. So then it begs the question, like, who's going to be responsible for, you know, or being accountable for really defining and approving cybersecurity requirements? Like, where is that going to be yeoman?
Yeah, if you ask me, I think this is a cross-functional thing, right? So I feel like in 10 years, this is not going to feel like quite the big scary thing it is right now. It's going to feel like we're used to following standards, right? And we're used to having system engineers or compliance engineers that dig into those standards, and the folks in the quality regulatory team know them well enough to kind of be able to review the documentation and the output that comes from them. But you know, I think it's largely going to be sort of a cross-functional, everybody's got to hold hands and sort of get through this together, right? Because someone's going to need to determine what technical controls are going to be put in place. You know, MDR, Annex 1, you know, favorite word, state of the art, right? So just like risk management, they put security in that bucket. FDA talks about, you know, demonstrating reasonable assurance that device and related systems are cyber secure. You know, when I read those kind of words from my background, that means the company has to make risk-based decisions on what the right technical controls are to build around and be able to defend those. But, and I think that's going to take a lot of work in compliance planning. I've seen so many different companies handle this differently. That could be heavily driven by quality regulatory. It could be driven by, you know, again, systems engineering or compliance engineering, but it needs to become part of the process. It can't be sort of like an afterthought or, you know, handled in a non-elegant way.
Yeah. And I think about what you're saying about the catch up with all these legacy devices out there, how they're going to have to, I mean, that in itself is probably a nightmare for most organizations, bigger organizations. 100%.
And I'll raise you one on this too, right? So if you think about this, these requirements are being enforced beyond just the medical device space, right? So, and they're also being enforced by customers. And, you know, one thing that I've seen really increase over the last few years is, you know, even if a company wants to put some kind of non-regulated health wellness or maybe even get into the clinical decision support tools into a hospital, those hospitals are asking lots of questions about security controls. They want a ton of documentation. They want SBOMs. Right? Like, yeah, these are things that are being asked for even outside core med device. In the UK, they started the DTAC program, right? That impacts non-medical and medical altogether. So the sort of this sphere influence that these requirements are going to impact are really broad.
Well, with the amount of breaches that have been out there in the news, I mean, it makes sense why there's so much scrutiny around it and trying to raise the ante. I'm curious your opinion on the overlap between a quality management system and information security system.
Yeah.
Because I think that's another huge piece to this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think I'm kind of one of those folks that, like, if I take a step back, right, a lot of quality systems are adapted to specific domains, right? So, you know, ISO 27000 series is all about information security management systems, right? But if you took someone at a quality and asked them to read it, you know, the first 30 pages of it is going to feel very familiar, right? There's a lot of similarities in, you know, top management being involved and training and like all of these things. So I kind of consider information security management system to already be a quality management system. It's just focused in the information security space. Again, if you go back to kind of what I call the old days, like 3 years ago, you know, the enterprise side would run very independently, quality side run very independently, but they share a lot of similar practices. Yeah, again, vulnerability management is a really easy one. You're required by FDA now to have your plan for vulnerability management. But typically, you know, those services are going to be run by a security team, and pulling them in and integrating them into the analysis of defects, you know, you can sort of meet two needs, right? What if there's a known vulnerability out in the universe? What's the impact to our enterprise? What's the impact to our product, right? There's that overlap of like, could it create a safety issue? Which I think people have been doing for a long time, right? To be fair, like vulnerability creates a safety issue, kind of jumps right into the quality management system, risk management side. But now that those cybersecurity requirements, even if it's not safety related, are still a requirement of the device in a way that has kind of regular oversight, you're going to need more overlap. I've talked to people where it kind of feels like they run parallel supplier management processes because, you know, information security management system has to have, you know, very clear requirements for onboarding a supplier. Quality management system, we all know all about all the supplier requirements we have there. There's not a good reason for me, in my opinion, to not merge those into a singular process as opposed to expensive, redundant processes that are happening.
I was just going to say, I'm not very, you know, I'm not technically trained. I learn through osmosis, through talking with folks like yourself on a daily basis. But as you were talking, like, seems like there's a lot of redundancy and that there could be a lot of things kind of streamlined together. I realize that there's separate, you know, compliance pieces on both sides of the systems, like when you were talking about supplier management, but I also hear a lot of redundancy to where it can maybe be more streamlined.
Yeah, I think whether you're talking about a quality system, you know, even if you're talking about running a 13485 quality management system and, you know, a CFR 820, well, KMSR now, but people are used to having one system that is influenced by several frameworks, right? Those frameworks become inputs to your process in your system. And you build it in a way that is going to, you know, meet the requirements of one or more frameworks. And I think there are opportunities to do that where you can solve the same requirements from, say, ISO 27001 and 1345 and QMSR in one shot, right? So I think there's ample opportunity there. It's going to be very dependent organization to organization. The size of the organization, does it make sense? How are they going to manage it? But yeah, I think there is a lot of overlap. Can maybe be a way to create some more bandwidth for people to focus on requirements and that side of things that we're going to have some gaps.
Well, to wrap this thing up, the industry as a whole has taken on a lot of headwinds. I would say probably at least from my own perspective, 18 months or so. It's been pretty tough, especially this year. Hopefully we're going to come out of that. But I would also say that growth is never a straight, you know, it's just never straight up. There's peaks and valleys, there's downturns, there's up, et cetera. I feel like we're on the verge of the next big, huge wave of growth as an industry. And what I mean by that is you've got all these changes happening with regulations. Cybersecurity is becoming a big thing. Digital health. You know, digital health has struggled, but there's so much innovation going on at such a rapid pace, especially when you start talking about now the buzzword everybody knows I'm about to say, which is artificial intelligence, right? And so I've got a digital health guy on the line here. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, you know, what's your opinion of what's going on with AI, especially its influence on digital health and kind of that in conjunction with what we're seeing happen with cybersecurity?
Yeah, AI is super interesting. You know, I think that I like to tend to continue to talk about it as a separate thing from security. There's a little bit of overlap, computer-based stuff, but, you know, we're seeing, you know, AI Act, there's new regulations and requirements around that. So I think that in a similar way, companies are going to have to adapt to how they work, and they're going to have to, and you know, QARA is going to have to work even closer with different groups and different teams, right? So, you know, the data science teams that are running a lot of these AI technologies. So I think, you know, there's two sides of AI, right? Like what's the impact of tools that we use in our business for AI? But, you know, for me, I'm more focused on how will AI get wrapped up into medical device products and medical device software. You know, the thing I am most interested to kind of watch, right, is some of the planned change control activities that FDA have talked about, right? I think that is going to be interesting to see how that works and to see how FDA sort of responds, both on the security, I mean, just going back to security, both on security and the AI side. Companies for a long time have wanted to do development faster and get products out faster. In order to respond to vulnerabilities and things like this, or to adapt, the cycle times are going to be increasing, right? Like that's just a reality. Everyone has to get sort of comfortable with that uncomfortableness, whether you're a regulator or whether you're in QARA, because now that these things are on the table, you can't ignore them, right? Digital health, I think it's a little easier. I hearken back to when the WannaCry happened back a decade ago, and you know, people having to like scramble physical, not only try to find out ways to correct some of the vulnerabilities and core operating system software, but having to deploy humans out to each site and update on-premises servers at hospitals and stuff like that can get a little messy. But I kind of veered off topic there a little bit. But
as you were talking, I was thinking too with AI, like we haven't even touched on where the power is going to be on both the upside and the downside, as far as, you know, regulatory professionals writing submissions and gathering data and having things, you know, written by AI and then correcting it themselves. Like there's so much there too, I'm sure, that's on the cusp.
Yeah, I am. I think like a lot of people, I'm fascinated and slightly nervous about AI, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Rightfully so.
I don't personally worry about like AI replacing a lot of people in this space. I think, I don't know how to say this exactly right, but I still think there's a level of pragmatism and risk assessment and analysis that still needs some human support. I think it can create some tools to make things, you know, to be helpers and to be aids. I mean, you're seeing, you know, a lot of tools, I mean, being developed. I don't really see it personally displacing people, but, you know.
Yeah, my view is that on AI as a whole, you either need to adapt and figure out how to make it work for you, or somebody else is going to. And that I do think it's a huge, massive supplement. Like you, I think, you know, in my world, for example, the monster.coms of the world, or then there was CareerBuilder and Indeed, and then LinkedIn was going to replace recruiters. At the end of the day, you still, yes, these are all tools, but you still need that human interaction to get an end-to-end deal done. In your world, I agree that hopefully AI could be a massive supplement or help to make your life that much more productive. But at the end of the day, it still needs the risk assessment from a human being. It has to.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think innovation requires, you know, deep and thoughtful understanding and balance and management of risk, right? And I would worry that if you tried too much to just leave everything to AI to try to make those decisions, it would stall a lot and make things a little bit static. Now, that could be just being a hopeful human
What's that movie with Wilson, whatever, the robots take over? Hopefully that's not the case for all of us, but iRobot?
That's a good one. That's based for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, man, this is awesome stuff. I got a lot of respect for you, obviously, and wish you continued success. And we're going to have to stay connected to figure out, to see how this kind of all rolls out. But I appreciate your perspective and kind of forecasting what might be on the horizon.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me. It's literally my favorite thing to talk about.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.